We'll be here as usual, and you're doing a great job. And it's a very pleasant atmosphere actually downstairs, a little bit less formal than we usually have upstairs. And that's good. This way we can have a little more eye contact with the audience and get to know one another a little better. The topic is Hanukkah, and of course Hanukkah is next weekend. It's very good that we have a chance to talk a little bit about it. It doesn't just spring up upon us and fall into it. The problem with a lot of us on Jewish holidays is we sort of fall into them, or they fall on top of us, and we're not even ready for them. So this way we have a chance to get a little bit used to the idea of Hanukkah and what it's all about. The confrontation with Yavon, between the Jews and the Greek culture of the time, was not just a physical one. If it would just be a physical one, then the words we say in our prayers would not make any sense, because in the prayers we say, so we say that the Malchus Yavon came up against the Jews to make us forget the Torah and not to keep the mitzvahs of Hashem. So clearly, even though it was Rabim Yad Ma'atim, there was a very big war, and we read about it in some of the history books, how the few Maccabees were able to defeat the great empire of the Assyrian Greek Empire, but still, that's not the emphasis in our prayers. The emphasis in our prayers was that Malchus Yavon was there, Lahashkichem Torosecha Lavim Achukut Tzunecha. And very interestingly is that up until today, the Greek culture is the representative of Chochmah, of wisdom for the world. And of course, we have Chochmah Satorah. So in a certain sense, it was a clash between the wisdom or the Weltanschauung of the Greek Syrian and the whole empire which came out of that, and then it developed later on into the Roman Empire and up to today Western civilization, and the Jewish concepts of Torah. Now what is the conflict about? Of course, clearly we know, those of us, for us it's a very acute thing because we ourselves are growing up in this culture, Western culture, we're rooted in the whole Greek experience, philosophy, science, literature, history, games, entertainment, art, music, all of this goes back to Athens and Greece, and as then was picked up by the Romans and brought down to our very day. Now, where is this clash? And I saw a very interesting discussion of it in a Hasidic sefer called Shem Mishmuel, which I'd like to share with you. And he makes it as a, he works on a parable from the children of Noah, the situation which happened with Noah, Shem, Chom, and Yafes. If you recall the story, after the flood, Noah gets drunk, and then it says in the Torah, Vayah Chom es Evas Aviv, Vayageid Lishnei Echa Bachutz. Chom saw his father's nakedness, and he told it to his two brothers outside. And then it says, Vayikach Shem, Vayefes es Hasimlo, Vayosimu al Shem Shneim Vyelchu Achoranis, Vayechasu es Evas Avim Ufneim Achoranis, Vevas Avim Lo Ro. Shem and Yefes took a cloak, they put it on their shoulders, walked backwards, covered up the nakedness of their father without looking at him, their faces are turned the other way, and did not see his nakedness. And then after that, there is Noah arouses, and he gives a curse to Chom, and he gives a blessing to Shem and Yefes. Now we, the Jews, trace ourselves to Shem. As we go through the lineage in the Torah, we see that Shem produces, Shem, one of the sons of Noah, produces Abraham, and from that's where the Jewish people come from. Yefes, of course, produces Yavon, and it's according to the Torah and according to our traditions in the Chazal, Yefes represents Greece, and everything which comes out of that. Now what do we see here? We see two things. We see that the sin of Chom, involved two actions. Vayar, Chom saw. He looked at something he was not supposed to look at. Vayageid, and he recited it to his brothers. So there was a sin with his ayin, with what he looked at, and another sin with his peh, with what he said. And the two brothers, Shem and Yefes, apparently fixed that. First of all, they did not look, because it says Ve'eves Aviam lo ro. They did not look, so they did the right thing with their eyes, and Ve'echasu, they covered it up. They did not discuss it. They did not discuss this whole situation. They watched their mouths. So we have here then the idea of the mouth and the eyes. And there is a blessing given to Shem and Yefes, and this blessing involves their eye and their mouth. Now what does this mean? The eye is the organ in which man appreciates beauty. We look at beautiful things and we appreciate them. And of course, Greece had the highest appreciation of beauty that you could imagine. Principles of harmony, pleasantness, attractiveness, balance. This was all part of Greece. The sculptures, the art, the music, to make things beautiful. And what is the difference? And Jews also have a concept of beauty. Zekeli ranveu, to beautify things for mitzvahs. What is the difference between the concept of beauty in Greece and the concept of beauty among the Jews, among the Torah-fearing Jews? And I once heard a very interesting speech from Rabbi Soloveitchik, the Rav, Zichron Lezalev Bracha, who said as follows. I think it was a Hanukkah speech he once gave. And he said that we find that the Greek culture, Western civilization, loves to display beautiful things. I think this season is the perfect season. So many lights, so many beautiful displays wherever we go. And here and there they put up a Hanukkah menorah, but I always have this feeling that first of all it's a copycat, because when I was young, about 35 years ago, there were no Hanukkah menorahs on display. All you saw were the Christmas displays. This is something new which came in the last 20 some odd years, I think mainly because of the Lubavitchers, who decided to push public displays of Hanukkah, and even went to the Supreme Court, I remember, to get the Supreme Court to paskin, kivyachol, that Hanukkah is not a religious symbol. Just like a Christmas tree is not a religious symbol, kivyachol, and that's why we're able to do both things. This is a new thing. This was never a Jewish thing, to show off Hanukkah symbols in the street. The Goyim, it's all over the place. The Greek and Western civilization is into displaying the beautiful things. They have statues of nudes. The Olympic Games, I believe, was in the nude. Their architecture is magnificent. They make plays for the masses. It was interesting. I once went to Athens. I was stuck there on a flight, and they said 6 hours in Athens. So, right out to Israel, so I went off to Athens. And I went to the big place where they have the remains of the old idols of the Greeks. It was very interesting. I think it's called the Parthenon or something like that. So they said, it was a very interesting thing. Was it?
Athens.
It is an open air area. In other words, their idol worship was done outside. The idols were placed outside, like in a stadium, sort of. And the people come outside to worship. Jews never pray outside. All our synagogues are inside. In fact, the Gemara makes a statement that I believe. The Gemara says you're not supposed to, if you can avoid it, praying out in public or in the street. You must go into a building. The Jewish people appreciation of beauty involves sheltering the beauty and hiding it. Tznius, for us, tznius, in dress, to cover up what is beautiful in our dress. The base of Migdosh is wall within wall within wall. Shalim has walls, come to the Harbais, more wall, you come up the Harbais, and another wall, another wall, another wall, till you get closer and closer and closer to Kedusha. The Kodesh Kedoshim is deep, deep inside. The more beautiful, the more holy, the more it's hidden. The less accessible it is to the masses. In fact, the Gemara says a very interesting thing. I learned it the first time, I couldn't understand it, but now I understand. The Gemara said that the windows, the structure of the windows in the base of Migdash was that it was wide inside and narrow outside. If you've ever gone on a walk of the Jerusalem Choma. You see that the Arabs, whoever built the Choma, have created the notches inside for the soldiers could stand and shoot out. So if the way it is, it's set up as an angle like this, so that when you're inside, you see, you can see from any angles, you can look very wide. You get a wide panorama. But on the outside, it's a narrow slit. This, of course, for defense, I understand that. But the windows of the Beit HaMikdash were so designed. Now, this is very strange, because if you build a house and you have windows, that means you want light to come in. In order for light to come in, your window should be wide outside to get the maximum amount of light to come in. Here is the opposite. The window outside the building is a narrow slit, and only inside the building does it widen up. Only a very narrow slit of light comes in, and this spreads inside the building of the Beit HaMikdash. A very strange thing. What does it mean? That these windows were not created for people from the outside to look in. You cannot look in. It's too narrow a slit. It's from the inside to look out. In other words, the Kedusha, the Ribono Shel Olam Shechina, which is inside, so to speak, he has a wide panorama. He can look out and see everything. But we cannot look in. If the window is designed, it's like the one-way glass mechitza that they have nowadays. The women can look one way, the men cannot look the other way. I don't know, in this shul, I don't know what the story is, but certain shuls, they do that. That's how the Beit HaMikdash was built. No one can really look in. Only the Ribono Shel Olam, so to speak, can look out. Why? Kedusha. When something is holy, it is hidden from the public eye. Interestingly, that the Kohen Gadol, who's more holy than the Kohen Hedyot, has more clothing. The Kohen Hedyot wears four pieces of clothing. The Kohen Gadol, eight. The more holy, the more it should be less visible and covered from the eye. And this is the yesod of tznius. The Jewish woman is a holy being. She should be hidden from the eye. Now, Greek civilization, therefore, is emphasizing the outer beauty of things, the things which people should see, whereas Judaism emphasizes the inner beauty, the beauty inside, which cannot be seen. There's a very famous statement that Reb Tzadok HaKohen once made, famous Chassidus Rebbe. He said a very interesting point. Do we realize that the farther away we want to see, the more we should close our eyes? My eyes are wide, I can only see a certain distance. If I want to see further, I start to squint. The more I squint, the further I will see. It says Reb Tzadok HaKohen, using the principle of inductive logic, that should mean that when I close my eyes totally, I will see the furthest possible, which he says is the fact. Because when you close your eyes totally to see, you are not bounded by the limits of vision. You then can see as far as you want. And of course, when we call the Navi in Tanakh the Chozeh, he who sees, how does he see? When Shaul went for the missing donkeys to Shmuel, and he asked him, where are my donkeys? And Shmuel said, your donkeys are so-and-so, 20 kilometers away, grazing in a certain area. Go there quickly, you'll find them. Did Shmuel look with his naked eyes? How was he the Chozeh? Shmuel HaNavi closed his eyes, and then he could see as far as he wanted to see. Because when your eyes are shut, you see the farthest, because you then see within yourself. You see your hidden self. That's why the Navi is called the Chozeh. He sees the hidden places and things by closing his eyes. And true beauty is the hidden beauty. And I want to say that now we know from science that this is even true in the physical world. I know my wife is a biolab specialist, so we get into the house many times, all kinds of biological printouts. And the microscopic world, such a beautiful world, the geometric shapes. I was just looking the other day of a little book, pictures of bacteria. The most beautiful shapes, calibrated, like the finest artist could have made these things. Diamond shapes, crystal shapes, all kinds of shapes. Millions of microbes hidden from the eye, but so beautiful, like beautiful jewels. And what about space? When you look at the stars, you see, when you look at New York City stars, I don't know what you see. You see here and there a little tiny dot. You go to Israel and you stand on the mountain in Shiloh, like I've been privileged to do many times, or even Yerushalayim, which even Yerushalayim has some smog, but it's pretty clear. But go to Shiloh, which is nothing but the star. You see, like God told Avraham Avinu, HaKochav, and see the stars, Kol Yezarecha. But take a telescope, take an electron telescope on a space station, and what do you see? Galaxies, twirling galaxies, nebula, shooting stars, meteorites, more beautiful than the fireworks on 4th of July in the harbor of New York City. An expansive display of lights and beauty that the naked eye can never see. Because the further away it is, the less visible to the naked eye, the more beautiful has God made it. That even in science, the truly beautiful is in the hidden universe. Kedusha Rabotai seeks hiddenness. Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh. Hashem is Baruch is holy three ways. And then we say, even though Melocha La'oretz Kavodo, we believe his kavod is all over, but right away we say, Aye, Mekom Kavodo. Where is this place which has his kavod? Because as God's glory fills the world, we know that we at most see a tiny glimpse of this glory. But his real place is totally beyond us and totally hidden. Baruch Hod Hashem, Mimkomo, his place is totally hidden. Rabotai, we are created B'Tselem Elokim. We have the image of God in every single one of us. We are a reflection of his holiness. Therefore, every one of us, every one of our own true self, is so deeply hidden within. Even from ourselves, we don't know who we really are. Man and woman are not superficial beings, but rather, every single person is an endless universe, rich in ability and filled with boundless potential. The real man and woman are to be found only deep within the personality, very hidden and extremely private. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Kivyachol, is extremely shy and private according to our vision. Yoshev B'Seser Elyon. God sits high in hiddenness. B'Tzeil Shaka Yislonon. God rests and resides in the shadows. Mi kamocha v'elam Hashem. Who is as powerful as you, Hashem? So Chazal say, Mi kamocha v'ilmin Hashem. Who is as silent as you, Hashem? Beis Hashem nahalech b'rogesh. When you walk in the house of Hashem, you walk in silence. Like a mother who comes into her baby sleeping at night, tiptoeing in, to tuck the baby under the blanket, trying very hard not to make any noise. Hatznei lechet im Hashem Elokecha. Walk with Hashem your God very, very modestly. And ralachta bedrochav. Our imperative is to follow his footsteps. Just like Hashem is barach, is very quiet, very private, shy and hidden, modest. So should every one of us be a quiet, private, shy, hidden, and modest person. Men and women have kedusha. They have a holiness, and this holiness requires tznius. It has to be put away and protected. We cover our bodies because our body is holy. The Greeks did not accept this concept of holiness. Therefore, the Greeks exposed the body and displayed it as external beauty. So it's so typical of the Greek and Western culture to have a Miss Universe contest or a Mr. Universe contest to display the external of the body. In Judaism, where is it? I've never seen it. A Mr. Jewish Universe contest doesn't exist. The famous story which the Gemara quotes, Shneur ben Hananya. Shneur was the greatest Jewish scholar of his time. And he also was known by the non-Jewish world as being a great philosopher who had debates with the philosophers of Greece. And he beat them in their debates. And he was very welcome in the king's court in Athens when he would come to visit. Once the princess met him and she says to Rabbi Yeshua, how is it possible that a man so brilliant, so smart, can defeat the whole Academy of Greece in the debates, is at the same time so ugly, so repugnant? You are a disgusting looking person. So Rabbi Yeshua, of course, was too smart to be insulted by this foolish girl. And he said, well, let me ask you, since we're talking about nice things, not so nice things, how does your father keep his wine? Where does your father keep his wine? She says, well, I'm not exactly sure, but let me go ask a servant. So she goes out and comes back a few minutes later and says, my father keeps his wine in the wooden caskets in the winery. Yeshua says, what? An emperor of the Greek Empire is keeping his wine in wooden caskets? That's an insult to the king. She said, what do you think we should do? Well, of course, the wine should be stored in gold caskets. And that's befitting the emperor. He said, you know, you're right. I'm going to do that right away. As princess, I will give an order that the wine should be removed from the wood and put into the gold. And that's what she did. A week later, all the wine turned sour, spoiled. She ran to Rabbi Yeshua and says, what did you tell me to do? To take the wine and to get it ruined? He says, well, didn't you say that good things only come in good containers? That wisdom can only be in a body which is beautiful? So wine should only be in gold. However, we see that wine does better in wood. And the Almighty also does that. He puts wisdom into bodies which are not as beautiful as you Greeks would like us to look on the outside. Because for us, beauty is in the inside, not on the outside. The Greek world, the Western world, is interested in who is the most attractive, who is the strongest, who is the wealthiest. I guess today it's Alex Rodriguez. Who is the smartest? Alex Rodriguez. Everything is, who is the most this, the most that? These are the externals of man. These are not the essence of a person. This is superficial man, a man that can be measured by his outside appearance, a man or woman that can be displayed. The Torah wants man to be the most godlike that he can be. Strength in the Torah doesn't mean that you can lift up a 1,000-pound press. Ezer Gibor, HaKobesh Es Yitzro. It's an internal strength, the ability to control oneself in the inside. Wealth doesn't mean I have a big bank account with $250 million in the bank. Ezer Oshir, HaSameach B'chelko. It's an internal feeling of being satisfied and being at peace with oneself. This is true wealth. In other words, to be godlike, to be like Hashem, to be an internal person rather than an external person. I can tell you real experience I've had with children in some of our homes for mentally disabled. See such beautiful neshamos, beautiful souls in crippled bodies, but such a feeling of life and of happiness and of joy. And that is the true essence of the soul, not the body which contains it. The more kedusha, the more hidden, and the more tznius. Eliyahu HaNavi wears an aderet, and we call him in our songs, Matzoy Shabbat, Ish Galum, the man who wears his face covered with the cloak. The Bnei Nevi'im, his students already show their faces. He had more kedusha, he displayed less. Now, even in Talmud Torah, the Gemara makes an unbelievable statement. Why were the first luchos broken and the second luchos was zochet to remain whole? Because the first luchos were given the kolos uvrokim. They were given with lots of thunder and lightning. And because they were in public, they did not have the blessing of eternity. The second luchos were given besinah. Only Moshe Rabbeinu received them. No one heard, no one knew. That's why they last forever. We Jewish people have a traditional aversion to publicity. That's the whole concept of an ayin hara. So many of us, even today, it's very interesting. The secular Israeli can claim he doesn't believe in anything. But ayin hara, that they still believe in. They don't ayin hara. The secularists were very upset that Shas, because Shas was giving out the last election to people, kameot, good luck charms against ayin hara. Said, it's not fair. We would like to have those good luck charms against ayin hara. Why are you giving it only to your people? Ayin hara is a deep, deep Jewish superstition, but a belief too. It's in sources. The evil eye. The evil eye exists in public, not in private. It's based upon publicity. We have very little biographies. Very little. Because the private life is kept private. The public image, unfortunately, is almost always a false image. And Rabotai, all of us have read the stories of famous people's private lives. We have a better example than, unfortunately, our president and new senator from New York. The private life, when it came out, was nothing to be inspired about. But the public life is grand, wonderful. And this is true throughout Western famous people. The lives of famous people, it's always, unfortunately, many times the private life is very, very different than the public image. In fact, I once read that the average life expectancy of Hollywood stars is 20 years less than the average life expectancy of the average American. If the average American lives to be 70, in Hollywood, the more famous you are, the less likely you are to last. The 70 will probably last to 50. Between drugs and other kinds of wildlife and AIDS and who knows what else people get. suicides. The private, the public, it's Ayin Hara. You know what Ayin Hara is? Publicity which destroys the inner personality. Because the inner personality is completely destroyed by the public life and public posture, that breeds disaster for that person. Yes, my friends, many, many Gedolim who were very unhappy about the publicity which accompanied them. And I remember there's a Gemara about one of the Nasiim, Rabbi Gamliel, or someone else of that chain, who every time he went into public would talk to himself and say, be very careful. Death is a death combined. The fate of the public life. Kavod only goes to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Any other kavod is only a reflection of his. Here's Rabotai. In Judaism, in Torah, there are no competitions. There are no winners, and there are no losers, and there are no medals. The Greeks, the West, gives honor to the man and woman who can beat others. He is publicized. He is the one they write poems about. From Hercules, thousands of years ago, to Michael Jordan and Michael Jackson today. They honor the best of men, the winner of the Olympic medal, the Oscar or the election. But in Judaism, there is no competition at all between people. You know why? Because every person is a unique reflection of our HaKadosh Baruch Hu, wanting to be a reflection of the infinite. Every person, man or woman, has their own private agenda, our own private life mission, an own private, unique life experience, different from anybody else. My day today is my day exclusively. No one else, alive or dead, or who will live, will have the day that I have today. It is totally for me. The people I meet, the challenges I have to overcome, are totally mine. How can we compare? How can we compare what I have to do with what you have to do? We're not in the same race. All of us have their own unique path to tread upon and to go to. And that's why it's crazy to compare people and to try to rate people and to try to number people. This is a Western idea. This is not at all a Jewish idea. There's no place in the Torah, from the beginning to the end, that we've ever seen a rating system or a competition. The Chazal say, Pasuk says, Chanoch lenar al pi darko. Every child is different. You have seven children. We don't expect in Judaism seven children to come out the same. We expect seven different kinds of people to come out. Because everybody is unique. That's why Reb Zisho, the famous Rebbe, used to say, when I come to Olam Haba, no one's going to ask me, why was I not like Moshe Rabbeinu, or Yosef at Tzadik, or David HaMelech? My life is my life. It's not their lives. Their life is their life, it's not my life. The only thing which they will ask me is, did I live up to the name of Reb Zusha? Did I live the Reb Zusha life? Because each person's life is so private, so individualistic, so unique. You know, Yaakov Avinu, when you read last week's Pasha, he strikes as being a really strange man. He worked 7 years for a girl. That itself is strange. To be to work for 7 years. Okay. Then comes to marriage night, wakes up in the morning, it's a sister. This is really... So he asks the father-in-law, what happened? He says, well, where we live, it's not right for a younger sister to get married before the older one, so you're a very eligible guy, so we gave you the older one. He says, but I worked for 7 years for the younger one. So love one says, fine, you work another 7 years to get her. But I'll make a marriage in a week. In a week you can marry her, work another 7 years. Just agree for another 7 years. Yaakov says, yes. Now, I'm not a big hero. I'm a Rebbe, so I'm afraid to use violence. But in this case, I go, what kind of crazy mishigas? You worked 7 years for Rachel? Get stuck with Leah, we didn't want. And then Lavan says, well, you know, that's our custom. Therefore, work another 7 years. Another 7 years? So, but he does it without a peep. What's going on over here? It doesn't make any sense. What kind of person was Yaakov Avinu? Would you do that? Would anybody here do that? It's like you go into a store to buy a bag of potatoes. You come home, he gave you a bag of apples. You go back and say, I don't need apples. I wanted to buy potatoes. He says, well, we don't sell in this place. We got to sell our potatoes first. Apples, you got to buy both. Pay me more money, get the second package. Who would ever agree to such a thing? Yaakov Avinu was a certain kind of a person. He was a person who felt that if Hashem is Baruch, if something happens to him, it's the will of Hashem is Baruch. Hashem is Baruch has put him into this position. And therefore, he has to go with it. He knew there was a problem there with Rachel and Leah. He wasn't foolish. And he understood that there is a point to marry the older one before the younger one. That is a point. And he wasn't into that. He was going to marry the younger one. But once it happened that Hashem Yisbarach did this, of course through Lavan, the scheming trickster, that he wound up with Leah, he realized it was Hashem Yisbarach's will. So those 7 years were for Leah. Now for Rachel, I've got to give another 7 years. He accepted the situation and saw within it the Yad Hashem. And this explains many, many things with Yaakov, which you don't understand on a superficial level, except for this attitude. The attitude being that Hashem Yisbarach puts us in situations, every person in a unique way. And we have to handle these situations. We can't bemoan the fact that we were put here in this way. This is what Hashem Yisbarach decided. I just have to handle this situation in the right way. But the situation is mine, and only mine. And this was Yaakov, and this is the one. In fact, the Shem Yisrael says, that's why Yaakov keeps two names, Yaakov and Yisrael. Yaakov is the lowest, lowest, lowest name, Ekev. Like a cockroach. And Yisrael is the highest name. It's one who competes and defeats angels. Why do they have both names? Because if you're a Yaakov, you can become a Yisrael. If you're ready to have people step on you, that's the situation God puts you into. And you work with that, then you will one day be able to come up and defeat an angel. And Rabotai, I keep on thinking about this Shem Shmuel Pshat in Yaakov and Yisrael when I think about Israeli politics. Why is it a disaster? Because unfortunately, it attracts people who want to be Yisrael, which is great, but don't ever want to be a Yaakov. Only Yisrael. I'm afraid that that doesn't work for the Jewish people. Maybe it works for other nations. But our people have to be like David HaMelech. David HaMelech, when you read in Tehillim, his modesty, He was a regular guy. And at the same time, he could become a king. That's Jewish leadership. David, Yaakov and Yisrael. This is what we're looking for. We hope we will get it soon in our day. So, Botai, we have to know that Judaism says, anivus, simple modesty, honesty with oneself, is the key to making it in life. The Jewish way, the Torah way. And gaiva, and always wanting to have things my way, and to push and to break and others to get it my way, that's the way to not succeed in one's mission as a Jew. That is the wrong way. I was just talking to some of the boys, talk about, everyone should read when it comes to Jewish marriage. The Rambam, I believe it's Tezayin, Perik Tezayin of Hilchos Ishus, and he said the following statement, it's amazing. He says, what is the ideal Jewish marriage? In the ideal Jewish marriage, Rambam writes, the wife looks at her husband and she sees a king. And the woman, that's the wife, and the husband looks at his wife and he sees somebody who he will give everything for, even if it hurts himself terribly. Chayv Adam L'chavedes Ishto Yotze Megufo. And I'm sitting there talking and doing a little marriage counseling with a Jewish film couple. And there's a certain issue which they're both very, very, very excited about. I don't know, whatever it is. And I say, okay, let's play a game. You are talking to the king. You want the king to be very happy. You want the king to be so pleased. And you are talking to somebody that you want to be more important than yourself. Whatever you have, you give away to her. Now discuss the issue that way. Their mouths are like that. They can't even get the words out. I'm giving up something so important to the king. He's not a king. He's lucky I said yes. And he says about her, she's more important than me? What are you talking about? I make 3 times the money she makes. That's not Jewish marriage. This is taken from, unfortunately, from the attitudes outside which have gotten in. Jewish marriage, Rambam says, is anivus. To lose is to win. That's the winner. The winner loses the fight. You give in, then you win. You have to fight to lose. That's what the fight should be. He should say, I want to lose, you win. And she should say, I want to lose, you win. That marriage will last the whole of bread. That's the Yaakov Yisrael marriage, Rachel and Leah. So that's why Botai, Anivus is the source of Jewish Simcha, and the Jewish way of going through life. And this is what we learn on Hanukkah. The Chochmah of Torah preaches Anivus. We learn that we know nothing. Whatever we learn is nothing compared to what we could know. When I go and I stand in front of some of the Gedolim, I feel I know nothing compared to them. I remember Rabbi Soloveitchik once in one of his shulim said, when I was in front of my father, I knew nothing compared to him. And then my father compared to his father, and so on and so forth. This is true greatness, the anivus. The Chochmas Yavon is Gaiva. What does a Jewish Talmud Chacham who looks through a microscope and a Greek scientist? When the Greek scientist looks at a microscope and he sees the microbe which no one else has seen before, he says, I discovered it! It's mine! This is the new microbe which will be named after me! And when the Jew sees the new microbe, he says, Morabu Masach Hashem, what beauty have you shown me? This is the lesson of Chanukah, the difference between the Chochmah of Torah and the Chochmah of Yavon. Yavon says, man is the ultimate being. However, the Torah says, the ultimate being is Hashem. Anovim Yoshu Oretz, those who are modest and humble will inherit the earth. These are the stories of our greats. The people that I, Baruch Hashem, was privileged to see, with Moshe Feinstein, Tzchon Tzar of Rocha. Remember when I used to drive with Moshe Feinstein from the yeshiva to his house, and he would see a Jew walking on the street carrying some packages. He would say, stop, we have to give this Jew a lift home. There's nothing better to do but to give every Jew on the street a lift home. And I remember Moshe Feinstein would go to every single wedding in New York City that anyone ever sent him an invitation to. And every yeshiva boy who got engaged and married would say, I want Moshe Feinstein to be the Masadik Kedush at my wedding. So he went every night except during Sfiras Omer. But the man went every single night to a different wedding. He did not know who the Chassan and Kala were. 98% of the time. It was the first time he ever met them. He would go because they wanted he should come and give them honor. Do you have anything better to do than to go to a wedding every night? And he would go to every funeral. This was anivus. This was modesty. They want me, I'll go. Remember Rabbi Soloveitchik also would go, anybody he heard who was sitting.
The Tzaddik Levracha was very medagdek to visit Menachem Avo, even people who he had the slightest relationship to, because of the chesed and the anivus which the Torah had taught him. The difference between Am Yisrael and Yavon, between the Jewish people and the Greeks, expresses itself, as the Shem Shmuel says, in two ways. With the ayin, with the blessing of the eye, the Greeks look at the beauty which is external, and Am Yisrael looks at the beauty which is internal. The Greeks show off their beauty, and Am Yisrael hides it, because the beauty of Am Yisrael is Kedusha, and Kedusha requires hiddenness and protection. And in the peh, in the mouth, the Greek mouth, which represents wisdom, is an expression of ego, of the pride of man, that man can know so much. However, it breeds exceeding pride. It breeds gaiva. And this can lead to disastrous results. However, the chokhmah, the wisdom of Am Yisrael, the wisdom of Torah, expressed by the mouth, by the path,